This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Ball high, fly to left. This is not going to get Pruszynski in. Merton, stutter step, he's under it, makes the catch. Pruszynski tags. Here comes the throw home. It is safe at home plate. Pruszynski knocked over the catcher, Barrett.
Oh!
There's a fight behind home plate. Both benches have emptied. This is going to go on. Barrett punched Pruszynski right in the grill. Now everybody's out, and here come the bullpen.
Grill! Our guy Farmio, Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was year one of 670 The Score becoming the radio home of the Chicago White Sox. Let's go out to our guy Ryan McGuffey of NBC Sports Chicago. He's a senior producer over there. You also hear him on the White Sox Talk podcast. These guys were thinking ahead of time. They decided to do a podcast on the A.J. Barrett fight, and he joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you doing, Ryan?
What's going on, Joe? Man, it was good to hear Farmio's voice again right there. That made it took me back. It was fun.
I can't tell you how many times I said to my coworkers just in the hallways or at work, just if Ed's name comes up, just like, oh, hit him in the grill! That was perfect timing. Ed nailed that call.
Oh, that's one of his finest. I literally had not heard that call in probably a decade right there. So it was, to hear him say, I triggered the memory, because he did. He punched him right in the grill. And the one thing that, I mean, there's so much that stands out about, you mentioned we did the podcast, and we went back and watched the whole game. And we did a podcast that was released today. And the one thing that really stands out to me is the atmosphere and the buzz of those old Cubs Sox games. And granted, you just had the White Sox, you know, were the defending World Series champions. So you had that little layer of kind of oomph that the Sox fans had over the Cubs. And for so long, I mean, since 97, when this thing was for real, that was the Chicago World Series. We all know that. And there was those three-game series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at both ballparks. They did it across the entire league, where it was the Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Angels, and even like the Marlins and the Rays played, for God's sakes. But like, it was a thing, and it's unfortunately it's lost that. I think a lot of it is because of the Cubs and Sox have won the World Series, but certainly the format's changed. But man, like, that was an event. And remember, like, when those Thursday games would get out of the way and like the next thing was Cubs Sox on Friday, it was a thing.
I agree with you there, and I do miss that. Just not just the buzz, but just the tension, the edge of your seat tension, and you could feel it. And the few times that I went to games, if you're in the upper deck, you will see people tumbling. You will see them tumbling. At one point, I just decided, okay, I'm not going to go to these games anymore. I'm going to watch them at home. But you mentioned the format, and you mentioned it on the podcast. I think that is part of it. But when we go back 14 years, and you think about the strong personalities involved in the game. I mean, let's just stick with the White Sox for a second. And we mentioned A.J. Pruszynski and, of course, Ozzie Guillen. I mean, how many times did we wake up the mornings for those day games, Cubs against the White Sox, and there was some drama, even if A.J.'s cursing out Mike North here on the Score?
Yeah. No, I mean, it was literally – you could pretty much just assume that something –
Or it was Ozzie. I said AJ. I meant
Ozzie. You
did
say AJ. Yeah. I knew you meant Ozzie, but like, you could just assume that the storyline from last night was either going to be doubled down by Ozzie that afternoon, or whatever you went in with as your game plan for that day was going to be completely blown up because Ozzy was going to take care of that at 4:15 when he met the media and give you something, or give you like five new things. And you guys, you know, you said stick with the White Sox, but like both sides of town had like fiery personality managers. You had AJ, the whole, like, he was that guy. He was the ultimate love to hate guy. Like, even we've heard it so many times, like, oh yeah, you know, when you play him, you hate playing against him, but you love when you're on your team. I don't even know if I buy that. Like, you had, it took a long time to, like, that might have been the AJ buy-in moment, even more than the drop third strike, where that you had to be like, okay, like, I'm in too. Even for the people who had a hard time kind of like hopping on, like, that was the ultimate hop on kid. He was the ultimate love to hate guy.
Because of his Twins years? Like, what was the reluctance?
Well, the Twins years for sure. You know, I looked this up when we were doing the podcast. AJ's OPS, his career OPS against the Chicago teams were the two highest of his career. His highest OPS against any team was the White Sox. Literally like 10 points lower than that was the Cubs. He just found a way to get under the skin of those big rivalry moments. I mean, like 60, yeah. And this is like a 128 game sample size. He knew when the spotlight was on and there was things to talk about and there were rivalries, he knew when to turn it on. I just feel like he came from San Francisco and there was that whole San Francisco thing, but he's probably maybe the smartest baseball player I can think of that's come through this town in the last 25, 30 years in terms of on the field presence.
You remember Michael Barrett before this moment 14 years ago and afterwards? What I remember is Barrett being a media darling. I want to say Boers and Bernstein were doing the midday show at the time. All the time before afternoon games, he'd be on the field and he'd sit there and just talk baseball for 20 minutes on a cell phone on the station. He was one of those go-to guys, kind of like DeRosa when he was here. And after this, and of course after the Zambrano fight, it felt like he never spoke again to the media.
It was unbelievable. I don't know. It was almost like a case of, like, you know, dual personality. And I think Chris Kamka on the podcast had a great stat about after that punch was thrown, the amount of games played by Michael Barrett and the amount of games played by AJ Pierzynski after the punch. And I don't know the exact number, but I do know this. It was like Michael Barrett had like 215 games and AJ Pierzynski played over 1,000 after that punch was thrown. Yeah. I mean, think about that. And they were the same age. That's like, it wasn't like Barrett was 35 years old. They were the same age. And after that punch was thrown, and like you mentioned, Barrett was a go-to Cub, a go-to guy for the media, but he was a good player. He was a solid player. Like, he was a dependable, you know, he wasn't the guy who was going to drive
in 80
to 100 pounds. Yeah, I know. And that was it. I mean, look, if you're known, when you start fighting teammates, that's not going to carry well. And you start fighting them in the dugout on camera. You know how these things are, these unwritten rules and all the crap that goes on with it. Sometimes, like, that'll get you black flags sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy when that punch was thrown and the amount of hysteria that followed, kind of how the trajectory of two guys' careers went.
Well, yeah, how do we get back to that? Because we've said that it's not like it once was. But, Ryan, I was kind of hoping maybe we would get there, because when there was chatter about three 10-team divisions and the Cubs and White Sox being in the same division, Midwest, Central, whatever you want to call it, part of me was hoping that maybe we can get a little of that back.
Totally agree. And I'm still hoping I'm still hoping with these proposals that you have the, you know, Midwest, the Centrals playing the Centrals, that we'll get a little bit of that. I know that they're going to play the AL Central, at least in the few, like, these things are getting written and rewritten every hour. Right. But 13 times against AL Central opponents, and then it'd be like 6 times against the NL Central. But I do think there will be a little bit of that, because think about how much each game is going to mean for two teams trying to get into the playoffs. I mean, you're playing 6 games head-to-head. It's almost like you're playing 12. It's like every game counts for two. The only thing that we aren't getting is fans. And so the buzz and that electric atmosphere, it's hard to replicate in a series like that when all of these guys are friendly with each other, or, you know, like, it's going to be a weird dynamic. I think at home, we're going to be sitting there yelling stuff at the TV and stuff. Maybe you're going to be able to have, you know, some friends over here and there and family. So there might be a little bit of that, but the fact that it won't be able to carry over into the parking lot or into the ballpark, I just don't know if we'll still be able to feel what that's like. It's hard to replicate that.
Both teams have too many likable guys, right? Is that, that's part of the problem here?
I totally agree with you. Both teams have really likable guys. And, I mean, it's not a problem that both teams have won the World Series, but it certainly doesn't – you know, both fan bases can at least be satisfied knowing that they have a World Series championship. Now, granted, it's been 15 years for the White Sox, so we have this whole new era kind of a baseball fan. If you're 25 years old, you know, you were 10 when the White Sox won the World Series. So I think you're hungry again. And it's almost like you didn't see it. It's kind of like, I guess the best example I would be able to give is like the 85 Bears. You know, I was 7. And I remember it. I have a great memory of it, but it's so distant at this point. Like, I'm just like, please, I'm so done. Like, I want to see something fresh and new. So I feel like there is a little bit of angst and going through a rebuild and stuff. There was so much excitement about this season for the White Sox. But I think if you add, here's what I hope happens. I hope we get baseball, but I hope that we learn some great things about some of this experimental stuff. Like, this is the ultimate time to experiment. The ratings are going to be higher than they probably ever would be otherwise. Let's see if some of this stuff that we throw against the wall sticks. And if it does, don't be afraid to bring it back. That to me is like the best case scenario of what could happen.
I hope you're right. But what we've heard so far with the health plan, 67 pages and all of that, I question how they're going to enforce some of this stuff. I'm glad that it sounds like they're thinking just about everything. But I really haven't heard too much about what they're going to try in the game. Have you?
No, I've heard some stuff about miking up players, kind of like they did in spring training.
All-star? Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously there would have to be kind of like, you know, guys might be afraid to do it, but look, it's all going to go through the truck and they're going to be able to turn it around. It's not going to be like it's live to tape or live to screen. They're going to be able to, you know, just like you do now when you see an NBA game and guys are mic'd up. But I do think that would help. It would help the personalities. It would help some of these new fans and faces that you're going to get. And I mean, you're right. I don't know how, in terms of rule changes, I mean, we're going to see the bolt. You're going to have expanded rosters. You're going to have the three batter rule. Some of the new stuff we were going to see anyway. Right. I think at this point we all just like, let's just make it happen. So
yeah, we don't care.
Let's get another. Wouldn't it be weird if we saw a Cubs Sox brawl and there was like no one to see it? Like, I mean, it would be like we're all going to be sitting here on TV like yelling and going, oh, here's something. Twitter would go crazy. But speaking of which, like, think about Twitter during the AJ Barrett years too, like the AJ Barrett fight. I mean, I don't even know. It'd be fun to kind of replicate that again too, but I don't know. It'll be, it certainly was an interesting time. I think you hit it right on the head about there were guys that were fiery, managers that were fiery. I think the fact that they won the World Series, you had two teams, like the White Sox were literally taking the town and the Cubs were tanking. You know, mm-hmm. Dusty was on his way out. D. Lee was hurt. You know, all of these things, like they were fading fast. The White Sox were amongst the best teams in baseball in 2006, and it was just, I think enough had probably. I don't know. I mean, enough was enough. I've watched that thing so many different times now, especially in the last 24 hours. And I really don't have a problem with what AJ did at all. AJ slapping the plate at home, not that big of a deal to me. It's AJ. The only thing I like. Pseudo question is whether when he got up to kind of did the lean, like almost as if he was falling kind of into Barrett when Barrett grabbed him. That's the only part I'm like, it's hard. Maybe like that was a thing, but otherwise Barrett was kind of a tool. I mean, he hit a guy in the face and it was fun. I'm glad. I mean, and the White Sox won 7-0 and it that day at the ballpark. I mean, as if the place needed any more electricity. I mean, come on.
It feels like what we learned after that moment was Barrett was a secret bad guy, and we all know about secret bad guys in this game. They'll turn it on for cameras, but the second that camera, those microphones are off, they seem to be a different person. Joe Ostrowski with you, 670 The Score. We've got Ryan McGuffey here, senior producer, NBC Sports Chicago. Guff, how many sports docs have you worked on?
probably close to 10, probably 8 to 10. I guess 8 to on the spot, I'd say 8 to 10.
Do you have a personal favorite of yours?
I have two. Rain Men, which is about game 7 of the Cubs, and the fact that we turned that thing around is basically a 9-week span of trying to catch up to all those guys, because I thought game 7 was so important that it was almost like you could get guys to reflect on that moment. You could almost get like 10 years of reflection in the immediate, which is really hard to do. But because of the uniqueness of game 7, I was really passionate about that. And so I was really proud of that. And I think the Hawk documentary, I mean, I think the one that we did with the White Sox, kind of in conjunction with the White Sox, would work together. I didn't know if I had what my expectations were going in, just because, you know, it's Hawk, and he couldn't have been better to work with. And I feel like I kind of just this. I feel like I got a better side. Got to know a guy I didn't really know at all, and like that to me is like that's the ultimate compliment to the person you're doing a documentary on and the people you work with. Is if you got something out of it too, that other people at home are getting just like the pleasure of seeing it. I think that's the ultimate value.
We've heard a lot about the complaints since it wrapped up on Sunday, but I want to go to the other end of the spectrum. Someone in the business, you've worked on numerous docs, as you just mentioned. How impressed were you with Jason Hare and his crew?
I watched it twofold. It was really hard to watch. Sometimes it's hard to like just kind of remove yourself and be a fan, but because it was the 90s Bulls, like it was so much fun to be just watch and like kind of go down memory lane like all of us. But I was taking mental notes and like legit real notes the whole time. And to be able to do that project, pull that off, like I kept thinking, I was counting the different times where Michael Jordan was in a different location. So I'm like, okay, he did 3 different interviews. I wonder which one he did first. And a lot of people wrote things about, you know, how the thing was done the whole time. And there was good, whether it was The Athletic or people, the former beat writers, kind of giving us that behind the scenes stuff. It was really good. But the amount of tape they had to go through to get, and the amount of interviews and people you mentioned, like, there's going to be guys, there's always going to be people who are pissed off. Like somebody's going to be portrayed wrong. But Michael Jordan had to okay this whole thing, start to finish. He had to okay the camera in 1998. Why wouldn't he be the guy signing off and okaying everything in 2020? Like, people shouldn't be that surprised or mad at that. The one thing I'll say is the video from 98 was good. I loved being able to go back and, like, when they were talking about Doug Collins sweating in the locker room, I think Paxson was talking about how much he sweat. And all of a sudden, there's Doug Collins in 1988 in some horrible road locker room sweating profusely. That was the stuff that I was so impressed with. It wasn't just the 98 behind-the-scenes footage. I thought the behind-the-scenes footage for the 10 episodes we saw was just off the charts. I mean, to be able to – I'm just telling you, to be able to match a story or a soundbite with the actual video that they're referring to during the interview, that is so much fun to find. And it's like – it's like a key that works in the lock for the first time. You're like, yes, this works. I wonder where this door goes. And then you get in there and I go, it's kind of like an escape room. And they did it. Like, they nailed it. And no one else could ever do it. And no one else will ever do it again with Jordan. And I have a true respect and appreciation for the amount of things and the amount of interviews, the amount of work to move up a timeline 2 months to get that on the air. Everyone just was like, yeah, let's just do it. Come on, put it up. Fans, we need it. But those guys were editing all the way to the end. I mean, those last two episodes were not done when they started this in late April. And
episode 10 was done Thursday. Last Thursday.
Think about that. I've been there. I've been there sweating, 48 hours, 72 hours beforehand, going, oh my God, it's all going to crash. Think about that. Episode 10 was done Thursday. I mean, I hope they're popping like the best bottle of champagne of all time and smoking like the finest cigar, because what they gave, I mean, timing is everything in life in so many aspects. The fact that they had this thing ready, or they were going to debut this thing and the pandemic breaks out. I mean, they looked like that's the only lucky part of the pandemic. I'm not going to make light of that. But to sit there and have the whole country, like literally the entire country, just waiting at 8 o'clock every Sunday night and just kind of shutting down for 120 minutes. It was, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever be able to, like, that'll probably, like, well, God, I hope it doesn't happen again. And to have all of those pieces come together for something that was so much, that was so enjoyable, especially to this town and to a player that'll, that no one will ever surpass again in this town. I think it was, I hope people, like, honestly, that viewed it and fans of it just, like, realize, like, what a gift it was to be able to have that, because it's just so many things have to come together to make something like that work.
Did you have a favorite story?
Favorite story. You know what my favorite part, like, I don't know. I think my favorite part was just seeing Michael Jordan raw. And yeah, he was, for a guy that was so, his image and how he did every press conference in a suit and how he was, he said all the right things. He, you know, whether or not he was the same guy, you know, behind the camera and all that stuff, whatever, we know. But every time you saw his image, it was so controlled. It was so perfect. It was so managed extremely well. And the fact that we kind of, like, he didn't care anymore. Like, he, when the camera was rolling and he was doing one-on-one interviews back in the 90s, he knew even if he wanted to, like, go off, he didn't go off. And this time was different. It was so much fun to see him just talk, you know? Like, you want to drop an F-bomb? Drop an F-bomb. You want to say something one way or the other? Do it. And I, to me, there are so many great stories, but I just thought just seeing kind of Michael Jordan raw for the first time like that in a situation like that was probably the thing I took away the most that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was the big hook, because we haven't even heard from Michael in so damn long.
Right.
Okay, among the complaints, obviously people upset the way they're portrayed. Scottie Pippen, we know what Horace Grant right. is out there swearing at everybody right now about it.
Yeah.
I feel for Jerry Krause's family a little bit, and I was surprised yeah. to hear Hayer say that he's surprised that people think we're picking on Krause. That's clearly what was going on. Some had issues that they're jumping around too much. Ken
right.
Burns had his issues, but I guess he also apologized to Hayer. Any of those complaints legitimate?
Like I said before, I mean, basically Michael Jordan is the executive producer at this thing. So maybe there were storylines or portrayals that they wanted to keep. I could promise you that Jordan cut stuff. There's no doubt. I buy the argument that Horace Grant, I buy some of what Horace Grant is selling. I kind of buy a little bit of everybody, but at the end of the day, like, there are things that you have to just take a step back and look at. You know, the stories about trying to blow up the Bulls. You know, Krause, like, tried to be like, even, you know, even Jerry Reinsdorf had some criticisms of Jerry. I think everybody was worthy of criticism that was criticized. Jordan was worthy of criticism. He was criticized. They hit the storyline. It's not like they skipped the gambling stuff. Scottie mm-hmm. Pippen didn't take the shot with 1.8. He sat on the bench. Tony Kukoc hit it and had a chance to say, I would do it again, and or I would do it over. And he said he doubled down. Like,
how do you tell the story without 1.8? You can't do it.
Can't do it. You can't because you need to know, like, that's how Tony Kukoc basically became a trusted, like, you need to know the evolution of Tony Kukoc. We are learning about the evolution of the entire 90s teams. Tony Kukoc is a major player. I thought I didn't have any idea about the Tony Kukoc stuff and the Dream Team and how the Bulls were, like, I felt bad for Tony there, but then he kind of just came over and dealt with it. So I don't know. I think here's the way I look at it. If everyone loves it and no one criticizes it, it was a fluff piece. It wasn't done well. And if there's no criticism, then it's just like the perfect thing. Then, you know, you have to take some kind of criticism no matter when or what you're doing. The fact that the biggest names, whether there are people on the team, in the dock, I mean, Ken Burns is going to criticize my doc, I'm all in. Please, I'll send Ken Burns. The next doc I do, I will happily, if Ken Burns has a problem with it, I want to publish the fact that Ken Burns commented on the documentary I did. That's not a bad thing. Like, I think that criticisms are warranted. Some are taken too far. Horace is going off the deep end. Everyone, just like they did when they played with the Chicago Bulls, How many of these guys in the 90s Bulls teams have careers today?
Because of MJ.
Because of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Every damn one of them. And they'll tell you that. Like, we have Will Perdue. Will's, I love Will's a friend of mine. He's a phenomenal analyst. He's a great dude. And he'll also tell you that, like, had the Bulls not won three titles in the 90s, does Will Perdue resonate like he does in Chicago today? I think we all know the answer to that question. You know, it's different when you win. And if you're an 85 Bear and you won, like, you're still living off of that. If you're a really good Bear that didn't win a Super Bowl, you're not an 85 Bear. And all of these guys that played on the 90s Bulls, like Steve Kerr said it, like Steve Kerr's not afraid to say it. Steve Kerr's going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best basketball minds in the game. Every team would love to have Steve Kerr as a head coach. And Steve Kerr, like we have a podcast coming out next week. NBC, we have an NBC national podcast debuting called Sports Uncovered. Next Thursday is the first episode. Me and Tony Gill are the executive producers of it. It's the I'm Back episode. It's an hour long. It's phenomenal. Never heard, never told stories about Jordan's secret practice with the Warriors. And Steve Kerr says it.
He says
it right there. He's like, Steve Kerr says, like, I kind of owe my whole life to Jordan. I still, to this day, I need to thank Michael Jordan. I'm always going to be thankful for what I did.
That's awesome, man. A few weeks late, but I want to go back on the air and mention congrats to you and everybody over there for what you're able to accomplish with Be Chicago Together We Can, the telethon. I can only imagine. You were talking about how difficult it is, what they did with Last Dance. I could only imagine the few weeks preceding that airing.
Yeah, that's when I, like, people trying to be cute with virtual Zoom backgrounds completely became a thing that I was sick of at that point. We did so many Zoom. I think I've lived with the crew that we did it with, about six or seven, eight of us, led by John Shipman. It was it just became a thing where, like, I woke up and had a Zoom at 9 a.m. and then I looked and it was 9 p.m. and I was like, what was it nice outside today? Like, what happened? But then you go back and look and you're looking at the list of names that we had and all of the people that were involved in it. And, like, if you would have told us 2 weeks, probably even a week prior to it airing, that we would have pulled it off with all of those people, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But thank you. I appreciate that. And the biggest and best thing is that we raised over $40,000 for the Chicago COVID-19 Foundation. And as you and I both know, man, there's been tough times with this for all of us, and we're sick of kind of monotony and e-learning and all the other things that are going with it. But the worst thing I've had to do during this, the worst thing is had to, like, spend time at home with my family. And there are people who are way worse shaped than you and I, and so I'm glad we were able to do something that was not just entertaining, but something where people in need really got to benefit from it too.
You guys knocked it out of the park. Hopefully we'll be talking about baseballs going out of the park pretty soon. Thanks, Guff.
I hope so. Anytime, Joe. You know that.
Ryan McGuffey, senior producer, NBC Sports Chicago. He's on Twitter at Ryan McGuffey. Check out the White Sox Talk podcast. You're a Cubs or a Sox fan, so you remember the A.J. Barrett fight. Check out that podcast. It was an entertaining listen this afternoon for me on the White Sox Talk podcast once again. Coming up next, let's talk to someone who played in that game, Jerry Hairston Jr. He will defend Jordan to the end on any topic, and he hit ninth for the Cubs the day of the A.J. Barrett fight. He joins me next, Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.